Hey everybody, I'm Bonnie Burkert, and you are listening to Truth Be Told Transformation. I'm here to share tools so that you can live your highest truth. Today, we are going to speak to a master yogi who has traveled the world to gain his wisdom beyond just yoga postures. So it is my distinct pleasure to introduce Danny Paradise. Hi, Danny.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Namaste.
Hi. Namaste. Aloha.
Thanks for coming in. Yes, and aloha, most importantly. So, Danny, we have titled our show Yoga and Music. When you have a new album, which I look forward to talking about shortly, Yoga and Music as Shamanic Technologies. Can you tell me why you thought we should title the show as such? Tell me about shamanic technologies.
Oh, well, there's been ancient guidelines for mankind since the beginning of time. I think yoga and shamanism are some of the oldest explorations of consciousness and healing and bringing balance into our lives. And they intersect. The yogis have always been known as the shaman yogis, and in Tibet and through the subcontinent of India and Nepal. And also just in my experience in traveling the world, I've seen the connection between other shamanic practices and rituals and ceremonies in native cultures and indigenous cultures, and they all intersect in the same way. They're all aiming for the same thing, and just different techniques developed in different areas of the world over thousands of years. So yoga is an exploration of breath that leads us to different, you could say, light trance states. You combine it with movement. If you're talking about the physical practices, then it stimulates the nervous system, but it has a very powerful effect on the vagus nerve. And this is the nerve that's responsible for relaxation, introducing an anti-inflammatory response in the body. So breath, modern science is really kind of understanding the technology of breath.
Yes. Danny, would you like to lead us a little bit in some breath work? Could I put in a request?
Not at the moment.
Not on video? Well, I'm going to inhale and exhale. Just thinking about it, how you describe that just makes me want to tune
okay,
in.
Okay, I will do one thing.
Okay.
And this is the simplest thing. And you could say it's the, classical breath for meditation. And as well as the practices of yoga and breathing techniques and pranayama. Okay, now you're sitting as straight as possible. If you want to try it, just open your chest, your shoulders back, but relaxed, your whole body relaxed. And you're engaging the solar plexus. You're putting a little force of contraction in the solar plexus so it's tight. And then as you inhale, you lift your chest and you breathe through your nose. So try that. Just breathe through your nose and lift your rib cage as you inhale slowly. And then exhale and relax. But keep your solar plexus tight. We'll just give you one other tip. As you inhale, you want to lift your solar plexus. I'll have to stand up and demonstrate. So you inhale and lift and open your chest as you inhale, and then you exhale. And do one more. Inhale, lift your rib cage, open your sternum, and then exhale. Just sitting straight and breathing deep like that is one of the most ancient meditations. In Buddhism, it's the classical meditation of just watching the in-breath and watching the out-breath.
So I love that.
It's a good start.
Absolutely. And I mean, in some ways so simple, and in others ways so profound.
Yeah, and if you just sit like that for 10 minutes or 15 minutes each day, you'll change everything.
I listened to a talk you gave recently, and you were really emphasizing the exhale. to remember that
Okay.
correctly. And so I think that what you were saying is that people maybe they do the inhale, but then they don't see that exhale through
Well,
long.
it's in yoga, you know, if you're taking a good yoga class where you're learning from experienced teachers, you learn the breath right away. And basically, you're focusing on a long, slow inhale and a long, slow exhale. And later, you learn different techniques for lengthening those or holding holding your lungs full of air or empty for different periods of time in pranayama techniques or breathing techniques. So, and pranayama, the definition of pranayama is expansion of life force. So you learn different techniques as you get deeper into the practices of yoga that have very profound effects on healing and awakening the nervous system and the glandular system and stimulating the immune system and introducing, like I said earlier, anti-inflammatory effects, even when you're doing exercise. So that's the one of the main principles of the study of classical physical yoga.
Great, which you've been doing for quite a long while, and I understand. Do I remember correctly that you already you referenced your father as a yoga teacher for you?
I did, but he didn't practice yoga, but he lived till he was 104 and a half,
Amazing.
and he lived a very relaxed life, and I mean, he had a very sweet, mellow attitude in life, and also he slept deeply, and
That's huge, right?
he taught me how to do
Well,
that.
so he was living what we ultimately what we often want to achieve a lot of times as we practice yoga.
I'll
So,
tell you, if you like, I'll tell you a funny story
of
just
course.
about him. You know, he was a photographer for the last 30 years of his life. But he used to go to bed at, when I was growing up, he'd go to bed at 11:30 in the evening and wake up the next day at 11:30. But later in his life, when he was in his 90s and, you know, hundreds, he would go to bed around 9:30 in the evening and wake up around 11:30 or 12 the next day.
Wow, dream time.
I guess so.
The yogis as dream masters. No, I love that though. That was a great example for you. And then you encountered your first actual yoga teacher in Hawaii, is that right? Is that kind of where you're
Yes, I met David Williams and Nancy Gilgoff on like May 1st, 1976 in Lahaina, and they were giving a yoga demonstration that I was invited to. And it was Ashtanga yoga, and David and Nancy were the first Western teachers. So I had this amazing opportunity to meet them, and they began teaching the next day in a park and outside, and that's how I commenced
And you've
yoga.
never stopped.
No, I haven't stopped,
You've never
fortunately.
stopped. So, Danny, one of the things I think that is fascinating for me about you is your world travels. And I'd like to ask how those travels to all continents have informed you in terms of your practice, the things you've learned. Again, we're tying it back into sort of indigenous traditions, things you've learned for them, but then how you bring that back into your own personal practice and teachings.
Well, fortunately, I have had amazing opportunities to travel, and but I began traveling when I was 19. I went around the world and came to Southeast Asia for the first time from North America, and I always knew I'd go back. And in between that time and beginning to travel again, I ended up learning yoga, and I continued to play music since I was a kid. And suddenly, after 3 or 4 years of practicing yoga, I was starting to get invitations to teach around the world. And so I began following that and have continued ever since, going really by invitation. And so it's brought me to 42 countries or so, teaching over the last 40 years, 41 years. So it's been a phenomenal experience just to encounter cultures all over the world and recognize they have their own explorations of consciousness, but yoga also fits in And so yoga has really taken off everywhere in the world. It's enormous in throughout Southeast Asia and South America and all through Europe and of course North America and Africa. So it's this technique that has influenced tens of millions or perhaps hundreds of millions of people around the world and continues to do that. It seems to me it's one of the largest mass movements of consciousness that exists at the moment.
Oh, it's so great. Absolutely. I mean, I know I've been doing, I went in high school. My mom turned me on to it. So my mom actually was taking yoga around the time you were doing it, and she turned me on to it as a high school kid. And it was, and I've never stopped. I mean, different forms, but definitely the sort of taking the yoga off the mat lifestyle. It's interesting to watch how that somebody comes to that. And I wanted to ask what's happening around the world with other people. Do you feel that they've transcended exercise yoga and they're starting to really live it in different ways, the higher meaning of it?
Everybody's at their own level of evolution, perhaps. And yoga, wherever people discover yoga, I think that's fantastic because they start to learn some techniques that change things emotionally and physiologically and spiritually and create more awareness and sensitivity just through breath and its effects on the internal hygiene and the internal organs of the body. And it really has this phenomenal effect on everybody. And if people find that they're introduced to yoga with a good teacher or just are interested in it, they tend to seek out other forms of yoga. It's all valuable, and all the forms of yoga kind of meld together. And Ashtanga yoga happens to be a little more concentrated version of the form, but ultimately of the physical forms, it's all Hatha yoga and the exploration of how to age with vitality and energy and manifest your dream through the boost and healing force that you get through the practices.
I
So
love
that's
it.
some aspects of
You use the I want a quote that
it.
I found from you is the yogis as dream masters.
Well, I suppose, in all shamanism, they explore the idea of dreams and manifesting your life as you wish. And the yogis are great examples of that, I suppose. In the old culture of yoga in India, it was carried by the wandering mendicants and sadhus and renunciates, men and women. And that's where, if you wanted to learn yoga, you had to wander off into the forest and connect with some of these characters and begin to learn the practices. So it comes out of the forests, it comes out of nature, and it's really a tool to bring people back into the force of nature, as all shamanism is. I think that's the essence of shamanism, is recognizing that nature is the spiritual teacher and guide, and that we can communicate with nature and receive information, guidance, and peace of mind. And this has been the message of yoga and all indigenous cultures for tens of thousands of years.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's interesting. I had never really aligned yoga and shamanism, and I'm not sure why. Because I really do like to look at the transformational aspects of yoga. I mean, that's the name of the show, why I'm doing the show this way. So thank you for bringing that together for me. I love that. I'm going to explore it further. So it's fascinating.
Well, it was a revelation to me, just to do after participating in ceremonies in the Western Amazon. That's when I realized that the goals of shamanism and yoga were the same. And then it became clear to me that the yogis had always been called shaman yogis of Tibet. And even Krishnamacharya studied with a teacher in the high Himalayas for 7 years in a cave, is the story. And he brought these techniques essentially to the human race. So
Well,
they are Tibetan cave yoga techniques that have infiltrated the entire world.
wow. I mean, it's incredible to imagine. Like, where did these come from? And it just seems almost, I mean, when you look at early man and how they were living, right? Much closer to the land. I think that we were given some of the tools that we're now using in yoga. And we're not talking the down dog necessarily, although it's funny because that's actually a really good example of the stretching that comes from a posture like down dog and seeing animals do it, not just dogs, but cats. And, it's
Sure.
fascinating to see how we've just forgotten to do that. And it's almost like, why did we abandon that freedom of movement?
It's all over the world now. Everybody has access to yoga,
Well,
so
thank goodness.
people are picking up the techniques. But I can give you my own take on where it came from.
Please.
But just quickly, from the beginning, mankind was, I think, discovering the wonders of nature and the power of nature, and they lived in nature. They knew the plants. They had to survive on the plants. They did meditation sometimes through unexpectedly through magical plants
Yeah.
or just through music and drumming and chanting, and they induced these light to deep trance states. And I think in these kind of meditations, they it's my feeling or suggestion that they received the information of yoga and how to develop the practices by observing nature and observing how animals breathed and moved and lived and imitating that. And that was part of the beginning. Certainly, it was through the intelligence of the people that were receiving this information, people like Krishnamacharya, who studied in this cave in Tibet for years and developed his own evolutionary explorations and take on the practices.
Well, yeah, I mean, one very basic understanding that I can ha that I have just from what you've described is my awakening around how the postures of yoga were actually developed so that we could sit in meditation longer, so that we could be well for sitting in to sit in meditation so that we could have that communion. Correct? Am I right about
Well,
that?
that's part of it, sure. So you can sit comfortably and still for short periods of time, not necessarily hours and hours, but you also learn breathing techniques in pranayama where you have to sit straight or for 30 minutes or longer, and so you just learn to extend your posture and hold your posture as you were genetically designed to do so. And it influences all the organs and the vitality in the brain and the body.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's all these techniques are enabling us just to live life and with more energy and clarity. And also, you create a force that you call on in critical situations. It's how I look at it, because as you get deeper into yoga, you're constantly increasing your vitality and energy as you age. Fortunately, it's one of the gifts, I believe, to the human race, and how to age with as much capacity as possible. And then just gives you these extra energies sometimes that in emergency situations or critical situations or life-threatening situations, sometimes you can call on this extra energy you have that yoga helps you nurture.
Yeah, indeed. So, how do you use that energy to make beautiful music, Danny Paradise?
Oh, thank you. I've been playing music since I was a kid, so I always loved playing, and I had great teachers that turned me on to music. And I suppose the effect of yoga has made me a little stronger and a little more deeply involved in the breath, so that helps and informs how I play music and sing, and gives me more stamina to play.
But the spirit also, I mean, you really, I have written some songs that I feel just take us on the journey that is your life. And you've got some great players with it. And so I know your most recent record is called Caravan of Souls. And why don't you tell us a little bit about maybe some of the people that you had on this record and who were playing? And are they all yogis? Is that a prerequisite to be on your record?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely not. They're yogis in their own way. I think, you know, if you play music, you're involved in yoga. If you're, you know, are involved in healthful activities, it's all yoga.
Nice.
Or meditation, but music certainly is a meditation. But, you know, George Knopfel was helped me put the whole thing together and Mesa Blue Moon recordings. And George was extremely helpful. And I also had my partner, Nadia Delea, singing on at least six songs and adding harmony parts. And she also helped produce several of the tracks, and she added musical parts and lyrical parts to a couple of the songs. And we had other friends from all over the world. Chris Botti, who I've known for many years, and I've worked with him doing yoga out of his amazing trumpet playing on a couple of tracks. And Michael Ruff and his daughter Olivia Ruff participated. Michael Ruff is a phenomenal player who added amazing keyboard parts and bass parts to the song.
He's a fellow Hawaiian, yes?
He lives on the island of Kauai. And
yeah,
there
just
and
so you know, if anybody's hearing roosters, that's explaining, you know, Danny's not a farmer or...
I am. I'm going to be planting taro today, so...
Wow, okay, well...
Sometimes I'm a farmer.
The yoga of farming.
Yeah. Yeah. And just Bobby Pars in Thailand and Matthew Kelly in Thailand played as well. And Bobby produced a number of the tracks from Thailand. We had Fran Moranti playing drums in out of California and Butch Thomas on saxophone on three of the tracks. And friends from Canada and another trumpet player, Steve Doobie, Dr. Steve Doobie from Kauai. And friends in Canada, Sarah Featherstone and Alan Hetherington, and some Chris Gartner on bass. So it's been a collaboration. Oh, and also friends in England, Dean Broderick and his daughter Maddie, and Alfie and Ben Whedon playing and doing arrangements on a couple of the tracks. So it's been this collaboration.
Amazing. Tell us why this song, why the album title, I know it's a song title too, right? Caravan of Souls. What? Tell us what that means to you.
Oh, it's just related to a song that I wrote on the album. And I just saw us all on this endless caravan and lifetime to lifetime, perhaps. And something you can't stop and something you just have to hold on to. You have to hold on to the caravan as it spins around.
Yeah, ever going.
So it felt appropriate to call the CD that. And the photograph is by Hamid Sardar Afkami, who's an Iranian photographer who lives with his Mongolian wife sometimes with the reindeer people of Mongolia. And this is one of their group and with one of their wild eagles that they train to hunt.
And that is just also amazing.
Yeah, it's a living culture in Mongolia, and they also train or catch wild reindeer and train them and end up riding them.
Oh, wow.
It's quite a culture. So Danny, Hamid Sardar kindly offered to let me use that photograph.
Oh, well. Thank you. And check it out. If you're listening to this audio only, find Danny Paradise on Spotify and all the digital places, and certainly his website to see more. So,
thank you.
So Danny, do you intertwine? Is music an important part of a yoga class when you're teaching yoga? I mean, do you ever incorporate music, perform music yourself as you're guiding students in meditation? How do you interweave that in actual teaching?
Oh, well, usually I do music a little separately. If I'm doing a retreat or a workshop, I might have a music evening. And we might just get a bunch of people to play and sing and present different pieces. And occasionally at the end of the song or at the end of a class or at the beginning of class, I might play a song, but usually I save it for separate part of practices and classes or just get-togethers that we have.
Events, yeah. Well, hopefully we can get you over on the mainland to do some music as well as some yoga. We all need that. So where do you
Oh.
feel? I mean, you've seen the practice now. Again, I've been doing yoga since the 80s. It's changed so much. I mean, there was like a whole mainstreaming of yoga in the 90s, probably later 90s. And tell me how you feel about how it's evolved. I mean, I think it's great.
Well,
You made the comment about it's good that people are practicing, regardless of where they're at with it.
Yes. Yeah, I think anything that gets people in the door to explore yoga is fantastic. And most teachers are sensitive and careful. And but I think people have to be, observant and careful who they pick to practice with. And it's not about cults. It's about learning an ancient form that you can gradually pick up yourself and practice yourself. So it's I always say it's about personal authority and personal responsibility, and not about following masters or even different routines, but learning them and seeing how they inform your life, and then recognizing that you can continue to practice a routine that you've learned if you like it, feel safe, and it's constantly strengthening you and bringing you some peace and into a meditative space. And you can also recognize that it's an evolutionary form. So if you study with different teachers and you learn different aspects of yoga, you can incorporate them all into personal practice. So it's about developing a personal practice that works for you, and just using teachers and classes as to inform you and to guide you, and not become dependent on the classes or the teachers or even the teachings.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because we obviously were not able to take classes during lockdown other than online. So, what do you feel what is the importance of that in-person connection versus and practicing as a group versus having that quiet practice alone? I took a
Well,
lot, yeah.
it's sorry, go on.
Well, I was going to say I used to take classes far more than I do and now, but I do some yoga every day. And then there's the kind of always just the higher consciousness aspect of living life. But the on the mat, breathing, stretching, movement, strengthening, tuning in, I do it. But am I missing out by not being in community?
Well, it's always good to check in, I suppose, and have a nice class that you like to go to occasionally, because it's great to be in a class. You learn in a group of people, and there's a lot of energy and enthusiasm, and you can have an experience of picking up some information from particular teachers. And then, like I said, ultimately, hopefully, it'll lead you to just a personal practice, so you don't always have to go to classes. But anything you can do at home a day is going to help. I always just encourage people that come to study with me to just do what you remember when you go home. And as time goes by, you'll continue to add on to a routine. And as I always say in my classes, as you get older and more desperate, you'll want to do more.
I like that. But
So, that's important.
hopefully we're not going to have to be desperate because we've been doing yoga for this amount of time. Now it's
Well, I suppose at the end of life, there's always a few, no matter how much you take care of yourself, there's going to be a period of transition. But,
Yeah.
if you do yoga on a regular basis, that transition period, I think, will be clearer and swifter and more comfortable.
Yeah.
And that's one of the messages of yoga, too.
No, that's grand. So, I'd love to tap into the energy of where you live. So, you've chosen to live in Hawaii, and I've had a chance to spend some time there myself. And there's really something quite sublime about being so remote, so in the middle of the Pacific. So how does that inform your practice these days? And I mean, it could just, you know, what is the whole concept of aloha, just to share with us and send some our way, please.
Well, there's lots of definitions of aloha, but one meaning that I really love is the breath of God from the heart of the universe. And certainly in beautiful natural environments, you can sense that and feel that with the wind and just the energy and just transformative power of the plants and the forests and the oceans and the rivers. So I always encourage people to spend as much time in pristine nature as you can. And fortunately, there are a lot of places in the world that we can still do that. And certainly when people go on travel or, you know, go on pilgrimages, whether they call it a pilgrimage or not, it becomes often a search for beautiful natural environments because of the energy that we receive from pure nature. So it helps me stay calm, and it helps me get deeper into my own practice. And but I travel quite a bit, and I'm in big cities, and often for workshops, but coming back to these places of, you know, purity and cleanliness is essential in my life, and I hope everybody can find that in their lives too.
Right.
Find some beautiful place in nature to spend time.
Really,
day, a month, or your whole life.
No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I remember even as a kid, it's like, you know, on Sundays, maybe we were supposed to go, mom and dad wanted me to go to a service. And I'm like, I just want to be taking a walk outside, like nature is my church. And so even as a little buddy, I was already knowing that. And they were pretty cool about saying like, fantastic, let's go for a picnic or, you know, a hike somewhere. So, yeah, I mean,
it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting to hear stories like this and apply it to one's life, like just to see how we're aligned and maybe have been on a certain path for all this time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So music as a shamanic technology, music as a shamanic technology. So I'm going back to that, the name of our show. Mm-hmm. So certainly have some ideas. I mean, we often know the mesmerizing aspects of drumming that can get us into that trance-like state. But tell us a little bit more about why you thought that would apply.
Music has always been a shamanic practice. And I mean, from the beginning, like we said, you know, when people were sitting in circles having gatherings, they would sit around and chant or play music with whatever instruments they created or hit a drum. The drum beat, of course, syncs with the heart rate. If you're applying deep breath to that, you're even influencing the heart and in a deeper way. And of course, singing does that. And there's a transformative state, I guess, just sitting around. It's a mesmerizing state to sit and play music. And from the beginning, from all our genetic backgrounds are linked to these ancient cultures that sat in circles and played music or drummed or meditated together or did breathing meditation or sweat lodge or magical plant ceremonies. And music was always an integral part, the chant, the invisible force that comes from music, that comes out of nowhere and has an influence on the human psyche and extends into the ether. So it's all related to these indigenous and ancient explorations of shamanic practices.
Oh, I love that. I mean, it just gives us a chance to even listen to modern music in a different way, in a more mindful way, and just know from whence it came. I mean, seriously, it's really
great. It all works, you know. Yeah. That's why people are so drawn to extraordinary melodies and rhythms and lyrics, of course, and it has this especially when the music is good, you know, we know it's good and it has this transformative effect and it draws you in, puts you into a trance.
Well, right. And it is said that music helps you hearken back to memories, right? So you hear a song and it reminds you of a time and place in a really powerful way. So, I mean, right? I mean, I think there's...
Sure,
there,
absolutely.
It's,
yeah, I think we all, growing up with different songs that we remember when we heard them first, what was going on and how it influenced us at the time.
It's really powerful, and I, you know, applaud you again. You're doing so much with all your travels and your yoga teaching, and yet to spend the time that you do writing the music, recording the music, assembling an incredible cast of players for yourself from all over the world, working on it, right? Recording around the world, correct? I mean, you go to different
yes.
localities to capture the moods and the essence. So, you know, we thank you. I know this is Caravan of Soul is your third album, right?
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate your kind words.
Oh, well, I mean,
it was a gift. It was a blessing to be able to meet all these people and be able to do something with them.
Well, indeed. So we must share that far and wide, and as well as your wisdom, Danny. And I feel like, again, you are somebody that has taken, you know, it's really beautiful to hear about how your father was an example of you, for you, not from a physical standpoint, but really from living a good life, a happy, well life. And then you taking into it and exploring the many, many facets of yoga. And it seems like you're just continuing to explore the depths of it. And your music is one way that we get to know you.
Oh, well, thank you.
And see what
you're
doing.
Yeah, it's an endless exploration for sure. An endless journey we're all on.
We're going to finish the show. I'm going to play a little bit of your song, Love Will Rescue You, as the show ends, Danny. Can you please tell me a little bit about this song as we wrap things up, and any final words you have for the Truth Be Told Transformation listeners?
Oh, well, thank you. Well, yeah, this song was written about essentially child trafficking and forced labor and slavery, and it relates to children of the forest in northwest Thailand and Songkhlaberi, a beautiful bamboo village where all these kids who've been from impoverished or stateless or homeless or rescued from traffickers have been brought, and they go to school there in this beautiful bamboo setting, beautiful structures, and 150 kids live there and go to school there every day and are clothed and fed there. And 250 kids come in every day for lunch and school, and another 400 kids or 500 kids are affected in the region. It's near the Burmese border where millions of people have crossed over and are stateless. So these are Mon and Karen tribal people that are represented in this particular story. And Children of the Forest is this phenomenal living example of how people can be healed, kids in particular, from traumas, just by living in a beautiful environment, being surrounded by other children and a small staff of loving adults who just help them reintegrate into society and learn life skills. So it's something very special that Matthew and Mary Kelly got me involved in. They've been supporting and helping Children of the Forest for a number of years. And it relates to the issues that are happening all over the world with trafficking, human trafficking and slavery. And but in particular in this northwest section of Thailand.
Well, that's thank you for your service and bringing attention to that. It's
essential.
It was a
pleasure.
It's happening
just
all
to
over
let you
the world.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Matthew liked this particular song, and we created this film through the amazing animated animation skills of Seyud Delia and his partner. And he also did animated feature films for Walt Disney and Steven Spielberg. And we had, so Seyud helped create this, the phenomenal montage in this story.
It's
And we
excellent.
had great players from all over the world too.
Very moving animation. So, everybody, that would be Danny Paradise Level Rescue You video, and you can find that, of course, on YouTube. And there is a link to the show that will send you to Danny's website, as well as to explore all the new music, the most recent music. So,
Thank you so much,
mahalo,
Bonnie. You're
Danny.
very
It's
kind.
thank you. I
Thank you
just
for
feel the
inviting
aloha from over here. And, for all you do, you're truly a master yogi with an incredible legacy. And so, thanks for joining us here on Truth Be Told
Thank you. You're very kind to
Transformation.
call me a master, but I'm just old.
Maybe I'll be a master at
Thank
some
you
point. I'm
so
working on
much.
that too. Thank you so much,
Aloha.
Eric. Aloha.
Thank you, Bonnie.
We appreciate you listening to Truth Be Told Transformation. I'm on every Wednesday at 3 with a new episode, and you can listen to the Minuteman Report with Robert Hensley on Mondays at 3. That's live. And of course, the very sweet Tony Sweet Fridays at 3 p.m. with his show live. We are here to just raise the vibe, everybody. So we appreciate you listening. We're going to send you off with some aloha and this new track from Danny Paradise. All right, Danny, we did it.